Thank you. All lines are now bridged.
Good morning, task force members. We will do our usual roll call, and then we'll get started. Andy Trussup?
Present.
Michael Adcock?
Here.
Stephen Lane? Cheryl Turney?
Present.
Denise Webb?
Present.
Erin Meary? Sasha Termott? Erin Malik? Valerie Gray?
Here.
Anil Jain?
Here.
Cynthia Fisher?
Present.
John Kamsky?
Here.
Lauren Thompson?
Here.
Jimmy McComb? Okay. Andy and Mark, hand it over to you.
Yeah, I'm working on the screen is up. Hopefully you all can see it, but my computer seems to be frozen on this 200%. So, Andy, you want to take it?
Okay, Yeah, thanks, well. Okay, guys, thanks ever so much for joining us this morning. And happy Friday to us all. I wanted to, Mike and I sat down and thought about what we should be looking at today. There are two particular aspects of the electronic health information definition that come out of work with one, which we'd like to discuss with the Fuller Task Force. And this is around two data types which we haven't really touched upon before. Mark, can you scroll to the right piece in the screen, please?
I'm trying. It seems to be frozen, so I need to exit out and open it up again. So I apologize.
Okay, no worries. No worries. Okay, so guys, I'll outline them. Basically, two types of data which are not called out right now inside the definition of EHI. And we wanted to discuss those as a group and work out whether we think as a team that we should be seeking to add those to the definition of EHI. The first of those is consent and consent status, consent directives, etc. And the second, And the second was around access log type information, and we can talk about that and how we could define that. But basically, records of who, either at an organisation or an individual level, has accessed patient information, whether that should be included in definitions of EHI as well. And the general principle here is that both of those classes of data are classes that we think should be shared and not subject to blocking, and whether we are missing an opportunity here to explicitly include them. So Mark's got the screen up now, and if Mark, if you can zoom back into 200% and just scroll to the bottom of this section, please.
Yeah, yep.
Andy? Can I
Hello.
Chime in? This is Stephen Lane, and I apologize for joining a couple minutes late. So I think from a clinical perspective that consent is really important clinical information. Well, I don't know about really important. It's important. You know, the fact that consent was obtained, it becomes particularly important. I'm sorry, I'm thinking a little bit in real time. Let me come back to that. Audit trails, I think, should not be included. Let's go there.
So, you know, we had a long conversation in Work Group 1 about this, and it's not audit trails, okay? It's just more who has seen my information. So it's not a what I've seen or anything like that, but purely who has seen it. But we'll come back to that. And John Kansky has his hand raised.
Just a quick clarification. When we say consent, we mean consent for access or sharing of information, not consent for treatment?
Correct. Or, but frankly, it could be consent to treatment as well. It could be any consent status. You know, and elsewhere in 21st Century Cures, and I would appeal to the sage of sages and oracle of oracles, Mr. Need, to help us here, there is reference to consent and the principle that we don't want to be constantly asking patients to give express consent to something when actually they're giving it already.
Sorry, you're asking if there is language in CURES or in our regulate proposed rule?
Either or.
Well, we talk about consent in the proposed rule in the context of the privacy exception to the information blocking provision. I can't really speak to whether I'll look it up. I don't know that there's a conversation about consent specifically in CURES and information blocking, but you know, it's a big piece of legislation. I'm sure it's somewhere in there, but I'll look to see about whether it's an info blocking in CURES.
Okay, cool. So I think that the general point certainly has come up in discussion is that once a patient's given consent, we want that consent to be freely available to those who are providing care so that it's well understood. Now, Stephen, do you have time to think through your clinical contextualization?
Thanks. I just don't know how valuable that information is to downstream users. I mean, if you're talking about sharing the data back to the patient should know whether or not they gave consent. I mean, they may be interested in knowing whether or not that was captured and documented, especially if they have a complaint that, well, you shared with somebody for whom I did not provide consent. But I think, as I thought about that some more, whether you're talking about consent for data sharing, whether you're talking about consent for care, it's really most relevant to the organization that obtains the consent. It's like it's a real-time transaction. And whether you're talking about providers sharing with payers or with patients or with subsequent caregivers, it doesn't seem all that relevant. I have a hard time imagining making the argument that it should be part of USCDI, for example.
Okay. Has anybody else got a comment to make on this?
Andy, it's John Kansky. I may be thinking about this narrowly or otherwise too narrowly, but we can't assume, for example, if a provider requests consent for sharing that patient's data from their organization, that consent would necessarily apply elsewhere, right? I mean, so I'm just trying to think through what we're sharing here and what we're accomplishing is because I can see circumstances where obviously a patient would consent to the sharing of their data at provider A, provider B, provider C, but then not consent at provider D.
So hold on. As far as I understand the rules, the information blocking exception rules, what they require is that if consent is required, that there be reasonable methods for collecting and offering the consent. You can't say consent's required, but then put process boundaries or not tell anybody that consent's required. This is the notion of meaningful consent as articulated by the old in the past, but still great privacy and security tiger team of the policy committee. So if I require consent,
were you on that great committee?
I was not on that great committee, but I know many people and I admire all of their work. Devin McGraw was probably the most illustrious member of that committee. The basic requirement here is that if I decide to offer to require affirmative consent, or if I'm in a state that requires affirmative consent, I can't just do that, not tell anybody, and then not share information. I've got to let people know in the appropriate flow of care and care delivery, make sure I've got an appropriate way of collecting that consent so that I'm able to fairly express the wishes of the patient. That's my understanding of the intent of that language.
And for the avoidance of doubt, Arian, when you say affirmative consent, you mean an affirmation of consent or dissent?
Yes, this is the so-called, the sort of really misleading opt-in, opt-out. But if I'm in a state that requires affirmative consent to share information electronically from, for example, an HIE, which is where some of the mechanics get in here, then I can't just rest on, well, I'm in a state that requires affirmative consent, the patient hasn't required consent, so I'm not going to share information. I've got to provide appropriate methods in the context of care to explain and collect that consent information.
And would it be reasonable for us to suggest, if a patient has consented for information sharing to those individuals who are providing them care, that they don't need to express that consent again at any other point unless they change their mind, and then they have an opportunity to.
Okay, I got the point. Or unless it is explicitly required by state and federal law, but in general, if the point is the patient should be able to offer the broadest form of consent legally allowed, I think that's completely appropriate. That is, you're trying to avoid the situation where I've got to go collect my consent from point A, point B, point C, point D, and each of the actors in point A, point B, point C, point D can rest on they haven't collected my consent at my facility, which is a real thing. I completely agree at that point.
So could I just ask from a patient's point of view, I mean, isn't this whole point of information blocking is to open the pipe so a patient can get care anywhere and have access to their records?
Yes.
So why don't we just open the pipe and allow the patient to say if they don't want to share it, but why opt out versus opt in?
This
data is shared because we live in a big country. You know, people go to Alaska
You should talk to the states. Unfortunately, this is not a federal or HIPAA issue. This is a state by state additional privacy law issue. We're trying to make sure that in those states that require affirmative consent, that the method for obtaining them actually addresses the concerns that you're raising.
I was just going to say monopolies have keep protectionism through regulatory state laws too, you know, so the question at hand is to say, why can't it be an option that this whole process is to open the pipe and that pipe addresses that consent universally by state and say, hey,
that's what we're getting to. Because if we say that your consent directive is counts as EHI and therefore cannot be blocked, then wherever I go and receive care, my consent should be available. Now, it might be that in a particular state, there is also a requirement to gain that affirmative consent again, and then that's a state issue. But at least we've encountered this from an information position that says that information is available. State, you have that available. You can soften your position.
Yes, or programmatically, it's like that HIN or whatever. It's like, hey, the patient default is open pipe.
We have a few members in the queue with their hands up. John, Steven.
Oh, sorry, my screen's gone blank. Oh, sorry, members. Oh, got four. John Kalansky, you're first.
You're not worried. So again, I might be thinking simplistically. The last 5 minutes of conversation really helps, and it makes perfect sense. But if we stick consent in the definition of EHI, then as an implementation matter, the entire country just starts figuring out how to stick consent in everything that they share all the time, so that they're not in violation. That seems way less nuanced than what you guys were discussing.
You're right, because I think we're discussing some of the outcomes and the functional processes around it, but you're absolutely right. Steve?
Yeah, I think John said it very well. I think that including consent in the EHI that is shared is it may or may not be useful right away. It may become more useful over time, but it doesn't seem like there's any harm in including it other than it creates a burden on the EHR, you know, and other vendors to capture it and make it transportable. But again, I do want to echo the earlier point that was made that oftentimes patients change providers and they change their perspective with regard to release of their information. Patients will, not regularly, but I hear about it a lot in my privacy role, you know, they change providers specifically so that they can get a fresh start, you know, whether that's for better or for worse, and they don't want the data shared. I like the idea that you know, we will be, you know, consent in and only opt out by exception, but that's not what we're being asked about. We're being asked simply to say, you know, should the consent data be part of the EHI that's shared? And I think the harm is low, the cost is real, the benefit is small, which is why we're still talking about it.
Okay. That's a good point, and you know, I think all of us who've worked in the privacy world and the privacy world appreciate that it can very often be a small group of individuals who have a very loud voice with their very real concerns about their privacy. I would draw members' attention just to, I think it's pages 403 to 405 in the Word version that actually is just a discussion around the privacy exception that Arian was touching upon earlier. This is different than the definition we have right now, which isn't discussed by or considered by ONC yet, but we are discussing it now. Stephen, can you lower your hand and we'll move to Anil?
Yeah, thank you, Andy. You know, I think the important thing is that there can be clinical implications of consenting to information sharing, and it definitely should be part of the EHI. You know, the fact that a patient has decided to share their information or not share their information could have a downstream impact on their care. It could have a downstream impact on payment. And if I understand the way that EHI is phrased right now, it's any information that can be used for past, present, or future care decisions. So I think it's pretty compelling that it should be part of it. We should be very careful about some of the comments made that it should not. This should not, the fact that we're exchanging that data should not be representing a current state of that patient's desire to share data with someone, but it's just historical information that will be critical to reconstruct when a bad care decision has happened or when a payment needs to be made for a certain set of care. So I think it's pretty, in my opinion at least, it's pretty clear cut that it should be part of EHI.
Thanks, Neil. That's helpful. Finally?
Yeah, I was just going to echo, I believe that it should be part of EHI as well. I happen to be in a state that has some pretty strict, you know, consent rules and privacy rules. And I think the ability to actually be able to do what we need to do, it requires having consents available so that we can figure out how to exchange with the different states.
Thanks,
Andy. Andy, this is Go. Denise. I can't raise my hand because I'm in transit.
That's okay. Go on, Denise.
Well, I just wanted to say that I agree as well that the EHI should include the consent information.
Okay. Thank you. And guys, I know that we all have concerns around unintended consequences. And how this could be implemented. And, you know, John, you outlined those excellently. And, John, you've got your hand raised again. Go on.
Sorry, really quick. Not trying to be clever. This may be a rhetorical question. So if there's a state that's opt out and a patient opts out of a specific provider, in other words, expresses to that provider that I do not consent to my data being shared, then that provider gets a query after the information blocking regulations are in place. Are they required to not respond, or are they required to respond that the patient has prohibited the sharing of their data, which seems to, in some cases, be something the patient wouldn't want disclosed?
Well, I think this is an, I would suggest my instance on that one is that that's a local policy decision that's probably based on local and state regulations, etc., about whether, because that's the same way as if the patient's expressly a consent decision right in front of you, you were just relying on the fact that you've had it shared with you. That would be my instinct. I'd like others to comment, though.
I don't know if that was an invitation for people to comment, but I raised my hand.
No, Arian, you can comment. Just chip in.
Okay. So, yeah, I completely agree. I think what we're really talking about is extra HIPAA obligations and how to efficiently handle extra HIPAA obligations. I think we need to be careful not to design additional privacy law at a federal level outside of HIPAA, because I don't think, A, that's our mandate, and B, it's a good idea. But in areas where states, and there are some states, there's one state in particular that has the requirement that you mentioned. I'd note that it's really hard to comply with, because it's in fact very hard to tell the patient that their information is not flowing because they didn't express consent, because you can't tell the provider that they didn't express consent. So you end up in very strange unattended situations. I think what we should be trying to design for is in those states where there are extra HIPAA obligations, that we don't allow those extra HIPAA obligations to provide an excuse not to share.
Okie dokie. So I think what we achieve in this definition is simply saying that consent directives, information, decisions are EHI and therefore should not be blocked from being shared.
Sorry, Andy, I've got my hand up. Can I jump in?
Oh, please. Yep.
Yeah. I think one thing that I appreciate in from this discussion is that consent is not just a data field. You know, the consent data is complex. When was it provided? You know, what were the specifics of either consenting to or stating you don't want data shared? There's a fair bit there to consent, and I don't know that we have standards for how to express that consent. So if we make it part of EHI, it seems to me it's largely going to be a free text, unstructured field until such time that we have standards, unless they exist out there, you know, and I just don't know about them. But I think, you know, it's a big complex area. So if we include it in EHI, it may be worth asking for some clarification about just what that would include specifically.
Right, and those are the points. But we do have standards for expressing consent electronically right now. You know, in modern standards as well as older ones, these are deployed, and many EMR systems. I wouldn't mind actually. So if Sasha wants to comment as well around this, but Valerie, you got your hand raised.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, do we want to consider including consent in the U.S. CDI version 1 if that's what we want to ensure happens, and then put the standards around with, you know, around it?
Given that they exist, then I wouldn't have any issues with that at all.
This is Cynthia. I can't raise my hand in transit also. How do we best approach this in light of preventing information blocking, where HIPAA has been so used in the past or misused as an information blocking tool? So how can we all think of it as the best way to allow for this sharing?
Well, I think if we that's a good point. If I ever think about that, can just let Sasha has had her hand patiently raised ever since I said, Sasha, what's your comments? Sasha, can you just jump in?
Oh, thanks, Andy. So I did raise my hand. I think I like the idea, if we are determining that consent is important, of putting a level of definition around it that might be accompanied by including it in US CDI. I know we had a little bit of back and forth earlier in the conversation about consent for what, but the sort of types of consent that were mentioned, whether it's for treatment at a particular facility, consent for a particular procedure and the risks associated with that surgery, or type of testing, consents for things like genetic testing and the knowledge that might come along with it, consents for interoperability based on different policies or uses that might be part of a particular network. All of those are quite different in terms of scope and how they might be expressed as far as information. And then also the policies that I think John mentioned around when should that be shared, when should the denial of consent mean that, in fact, the whole notion that consent was asked for should not be shared. And so I think that it certainly could be valuable to share that information, but some further definitional and perhaps standards work might make the process much more effective. And I think that including it in US CDI as a data class might be one method to facilitate the level of definition and clarity around all of those pieces so that it could be shared effectively.
Thanks, Sasha. And as this bubbled up from the work group, and it was a very brief conversation, it was wholly focused upon consent to information sharing, nothing else. If that's helpful for your consideration.
I thought there was a mention earlier that it could include consent to treat or any kind of consent.
That was a question that was asked from the broader task force. That wasn't how it was originally framed in the work group. However, you know, it's a worthy conversation to have, that notwithstanding that.
Certainly clarity would be important so that it can be defined and communicated appropriately.
Correct.
Also, someone mentioned inclusion in US CDI version 1. I think that's a pipe dream. I mean, it would be included in US CDI version 5 at best, but putting it out on the table, I agree with Sasha, would be valuable.
Yeah, this is Aaron. I have my hand raised. Can I quickly mention something?
Yeah. Well, jump in front of Cheryl, but yes, go on then.
real quick. So I know I mentioned this at the last high tech meeting, but I just, even in this provision, as it just relates to consent for sharing information, if we leave it right there, which I agree with Sasha's comments, we do need to define in some way or another. But for us to be cognizant that there are a lot of us that are also providers that also have to comply with FERPA, because we have a academic component to what we're doing, and FERPA rules for sharing information, student information, which could contain health records like immunization and shot records, things like that. There's a very different level of standard to consent, so whatever we agree on here about consent of sharing information, just leave it broad enough that I can comply under FERPA as well as HIPAA.
Okay, so just Aaron, I'm not quite following on what your request is. That's my ignorance, not your explanation. Just help me.
Yeah, so that it's kind of in support of needing to define what consent actually means, and that being specific, but not being so granular on it that it eliminates my ability to comply under FERPA. That's all.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you, Cheryl. You have been patiently with your hand raised.
Good discussion so far. I do agree that consent is important, and actually I had asked in the US CDI discussion, because some of our folks at Anthem who are working on the FHIR 4 certifications have identified that there needs to be some place where we're communicating when consent is declined, because that's one of the requirements, and yet it's not a data element that we've defined anywhere. So I was asking that group, where would that be held? Is that going to be a US CDI requirement? Is it in the technical information guide? I don't know enough about the technical, but we would need something to, I believe, communicate consent and when consent is denied. Because it's going to be a requirement way under FHIR 4 that's required by CMS.
So I heard an interesting sort of discussion earlier about when consent, to pick up on what you just said, when consent is denied, and we need to recognise that consent changes over time, and it's interesting to me that this work is going on. So why would we not try and give it some teeth? Because it seems like there is a general consensus on the call that consent for information sharing is something that we think should be routinely shared and should not be blocked, so that information can be shared subject to local policies and procedures. That seems to be the sentiment that's on the call. Maybe I'm overreading that, so in which case, let me.
Yeah, I think we got into a lot of very detailed mechanics that, as Stephen mentioned, will take many years to sort through. I think we're on safe ground by saying that one of the ways that entities either intentionally or unintentionally block information flowing is through means of requiring consent, and that not giving appropriate mechanisms for collecting and sharing the consent. And I think we're saying that in order for information to flow maximally, we need to make sure that there's an affirmative obligation, if consent is required, to collect that consent, or failure to provide consent, and there's an affirmative obligation to share that as broadly as is desired by the patient, to allow the data to flow, all the patients, the patient wishes the data to flow.
Okay, and therefore, should we add it into the definition of EHI to facilitate that sharing?
Can I add one little wrinkle to this? My hand's up.
A little wrinkles we can cope with. It's the big hoofing ones which are the popular ones.
Yeah, this is a little one, but I think significant. What if the consent, the content of the consent, is that the patient doesn't want the provider or actor to share their information? Would it be required that the actor share, that the patient restricted the sharing of their information?
Well, no, it wouldn't it be, the directive would say this, that the EHI is not going to be shared because that's the consent directive of the patient, therefore it would not be shared.
Yeah, as an observation back in the days when I used to do a bunch of this work, we ended up providing mechanisms that would say some information has been blocked at the request of the patient, and needed to be very vague about that in order to not inadvertently disclose information the patient didn't want to be shared. So, I don't want you to know that I'm seeing provider type X. You don't want to say patient blocked information from X psychiatric practice. You want to say patient, there is some information the patient has expressed interest in not sharing.
Right, but the question is, if a patient seeks care and I go to get my breast reduction surgery, and I just don't want the entire fact of that interaction shared, then does that breast reduction surgeon have to share that the data is being withheld? Or would that just all be withheld? I think that's the wrinkle, and we can't solve it here, but it's an important question.
Yeah, and as I was saying, as a practical method, the way that we handled that was to say, there is some information the patient didn't want to be shared, but not disclosed. If the patient didn't want the breast reduction clinic or the psychiatric clinic or the what have you clinic, that information wouldn't show up. But I don't think there's good standards in this area, good policy in this area. So the next step that I think Andy's looking for becomes hard, because I think we have policy goals, but I'm not sure that we have clear enablements of those policy goals.
I think that's fair. Cheryl's got a hand raised. Before we move to you, Cheryl, I just want to point out that other countries have already been through this, and policy ramifications and all the decisions are looked to, both Australia and the UK, who've actually been through this pretty exhaustively and gone through virtually every single clinical conversation you can think of with different data types, etc. We're talking about a very coarse grain consent to information sharing. However, all we're talking about right now is a focus upon whether consent information should be considered electronic health information and therefore not routinely blocked. That's all we're talking about at this point. Cheryl, you had your hand raised.
Sorry, my question was actually asked and discussed by the last person, but I do see a dilemma regarding what, because we have many instances where they might not want behavioral health information or even any of those physicians to respond to a query. So, you know, how would that be handled? And if there's a model that exists somewhere else, maybe as part of the discussion point, we can point to that. But, you know, I'm not clear on how that would entirely work.
Okay. Well, we could definitely do that, I think. John Kansky, your hand is raised.
Trying to be responsive to your question, Andy, don't know if this is helpful. If we don't leave it, if we don't expressly put it in the definition, consent is still applied, right? I mean, consent is whether the information is shared or not. So I may be thinking simplistically again, but is it my hypothesis, question mark, is that we can leave it out and the consent will be applied to the sharing or lack thereof of that data.
Yeah, all we are doing at this point is discussing whether we should include information pertaining to a patient's consent decision as EHI so it is shared. This is nothing about how you should comply. This in no way overrides whether you're giving consent or not, because that is
right.
Your
no,
consent
no,
decision.
I get it. So I guess I'm offering that. Perhaps it's less confusing to leave consent out of the definition. It doesn't change whether that consent will be applied or not, because this, I think we've demonstrated in the last 20 minutes that it brings in a lot of confusion, and I'm not sure what we give up by leaving it out of the definition.
Well, I've heard several people say that including consent directives as EHI is a good idea, okay? So I'll be, you know, useful to have that discussion. I think the point Cynthia was making some time back was that, look, we're trying to move the ball forward and make sure that information is not blocked and cannot be blocked because someone relies upon a lack of consent, a lack of, you know, express specific consent from a patient to share information. And therefore, including consent directives in information as EHI, so they are routinely shared, would support that. If a consent is not given or is not available, then that doesn't change the provider's need to gain consent or set their policies on how to process consent. It just means that the information about what the current consent decision is needs to be got straight from the patient as opposed to be exchanged electronically. That's all. I think that's all we're talking about here. Yeah, Aaron's typing away feverishly into the box. And I agree with you, Aaron. I think as a personal statement here, you know, being overly granular in consent definition, I think might be tricky, but you know, the standards exist for exchanging consent directives right now.
Right.
Now, FHIR has this stuff sitting there. So I like someone said earlier about including, saying USCDI, we want you to go through this and work out how to include it. If it agrees that we should recommend to HITAC that consent should be included as EHI so it is not blocked. I'll stop at that point. Has anyone else got any commentary on this? Because I might actually just quickly go through the task force and get a vote on this, because I'm not sure exactly where we're standing, because I'm hearing two distinctly different points of view.
Can I ask a general question? This is just my ignorance or something we may need to research and understand. Is any of this going to be prohibitive for research? So for human subject research and those sorts of things, because as you may be aware, maybe not be aware, under IRB rulings, there are some provisions given under HIPAA for that. So I'm just questioning it just to make sure we don't step on anything else. Would this prohibit or inhibit anything under research?
My perception is I don't believe it would. I don't believe it would prohibit or inhibit anything, full stop. It's purely about whether the information around the directive given by a patient is shared or not.
Got it.
Routinely, okay, within the HI. And it's hard to say, IRB, if a patient says, I absolutely dissent from my information being used for research, then it would be routinely shared that has been for that research has been denied. If a patient consents, it will be routinely shared that it's consented. I'm going to go back and ask for a vote. Lauren, can we quickly run through all the members and get an aye, nay, or an abstain? And the question I'm asking is whether the task force believes we should include consent directives in the definition of electronic health information.
I don't think it's a well-framed question, but that's okay.
It's a what, sorry?
I'm not sure that it's a well-framed question. That's
entirely possible. You have another stab at it and see if I accept it.
Well, that's where I was trying to frame up a perspective that we believe that in states that are in areas that are extra HIPAA, that affirmative requirements to collect consent are required, and that consent information should be shared as broadly as necessary in order to express the wishes of the patient, and that it would be desirable to share that information via US CDI. And I think to Stephen Lane's comments, this is a high priority standards activity to make sure that we have adequate standards to be able to do so.
Okay, honestly, I think you're right, but I think that's a level of specificity and granularity which goes beyond what we're seeking to do at this juncture.
Okay, that's fair. My concern is that we're asking for something and then not able, and we're asking for something that we don't know how to do.
Well, I wouldn't agree that we don't know how to do it. And actually, what we're doing is we're making a recommendation to ONC that they look at including this inside the definition. It doesn't. I know where you're coming from, Arian, with the state by state dichotomies around how this could be handled. But I am mindful of Cynthia's view as well, and others, that if a patient has made a consent directive, then we shouldn't be blocking that directive from being shared.
I completely agree with that perspective. We just need to be modest in some cases. The way that we might share that directive is non-standard.
So I think Arian is saying it may be difficult to share and convey that consent due to the variability of it.
Right, but that the bare information of it, which might be, that's exactly the complexity. Is I am completely in favor of sharing that information as broadly as is reasonable, but also mindful that we don't have a standard and computable way of doing so. And so we may need to fall back on paper, electronics,
or it might be unfeasible.
Or it might be unfeasible. That's totally fair. Yep.
Okay, Anil.
Yeah, no, I'm just trying to bring this all together because I think we collectively probably all agree that this information needs to be shared, but are a little concerned that that the standards may not be there yet to do it in a meaningful way, or to do it in a way that's not going to do undue burden. What if we simply say that our task force believes that this information should be shared, but it should not be enforced until the US CDI has the appropriate standards to allow for the appropriate standards way of sharing, and that they ought to do that by a certain time frame or something like of that sort, so that that's not a cop out. But since the general feeling is that we all agree, we just don't know exactly what the burden would be. The other comment would be that there are potential unintended consequences, but I don't think those potential consequences of sharing something like the fact that I did not agree to share my records for my behavioral health clinic or whatever it might be, that already happens today. And having the patient in charge of that, I think, is much more meaningful than having what I think happens today, which is you make an inquiry and they say, yes, they're a patient, but you don't have any idea of anything. And you can't even go back to the patient and ask them. At least in this way, you can say to the patient, you know, we did find that you had seen this provider. Do you want or do you agree to have that information shared? So then the patient is put back in charge of what information needs to be exchanged. Otherwise, I think we'll end up with lots of fragmented situations where if the consent information or the fact that even a record existed isn't shared, then we might be back to the same place.
Thanks, Anil. Those are very thoughtful comments. I think they chime in with where Sasha has just contributed as well. You know, are we trying to indicate the priority of this or the readiness for inclusion? I quite like the approach of saying this should be included. Here's the time frame for doing it, and whilst USCDI addresses how that will be included. I think that's a useful approach. At this juncture, can we just cut to public comment, please?
Sure thing. Andy, operator, can we open the line?
If you would like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys.
And any comments in the queue?
Not at this time.
I would actively encourage members of the public who are listening to this discussion for their point of view, because that would be, you know, obviously influential and important to us on the task force to take that into account. This is a clear additional class of information we are considering, and to know and have some input from the outside world would be very, very useful beyond our own professional and personal experiences. Has any other member of the task force got a comment to make at this point?
I like the way Anil phrased this, that we encourage its inclusion, but look forward to it having clearly defined standards through the USCDI process before it is absolutely required.
I would say, from a healthcare provider perspective, adding consent as a requirement to the way we're talking about it, I think absolutely helps also raise the level of education and working with patients to have them understand what are they consenting to. I'm aware of too many places that don't do a good job of that and just breeze through it as, here, just sign this document and you're good to go, versus actually helping the patient to understand what they're consenting to, what they're not, which helps everything from security to privacy to everything. So I think it's a win for a number of reasons, beyond it's the right thing to do.
Thank you, sir.
This is Cynthia.
Got any public comments? Oh, go on, Cynthia, quickly.
You know, I think it's also ensuring that the patient has access to this information and control of their complete information. Because as the patient moves throughout the system, we want to make sure that regardless, the patient gets, you know, automatically real-time population of their health information. So I guess the thing is, we look at considering this, that we just don't want to go back to more opportunities for blocking, however this consent is appropriated. And I think the other challenge is also we want to make sure there isn't a delay of gain, because the standards aren't going to take 3 to 6 years to try to find a standard.
So, you know, in the rest of our life, you know, even through Find My Friends or Life 360, you can time in, time out consent. There are all sorts of to know each other's locations. There's so many really in real world apps today that make it very easy at the point, mobile point, for control of the consumer. So I just add that to the equation to say I just hope that we look at making sure that both the physician and the consumer and the provider, the patient, have readily available access to have the best point of care information for diagnosis and modality of therapy.
Thank you, Cynthia. Really appreciate those comments. Operator, do we have any public comments on the line with my plea for input?
There are no comments at this time.
Okay. Guys, I'm trying to get public comment. Has anyone got any closing comments as we head towards the end of our time together this morning?
No, I think it's a good talk. I really do. I think it's a really good debate.
Yeah, definitely that. We won't get to the second topic. We will have to do that when we're back together again.
Andy, I'll just chime in that my piece of the work group 2 output should be delivered before the clock strikes midnight tonight.
Oh, you mean close of day? That's fine.
Close of my day.
Hang on. I was going to say that's like 3 o'clock in the morning for us normal people.
Okay,
that's great. thank you very much. I really appreciate it. And actually, Task Force members, I know everybody has been hard at work drafting out their interpretations of the workgroup deliberations, and I also fully appreciate that every single member is following the consensus of the group, not necessarily our personal beliefs. So that's really good too. Okay, so I think where we've landed on this topic is that as a consensus, and we are going to quickly go around everybody just to make sure that I'm on the same right message here, is that we will draft out some wording for as a recommendation for inclusion, which specifies that consent directives or consent information would be part of EHI, and give it a timescale for adoption with a preamble around USCDI, ensuring that the standards are in place to support that. I think that's where we landed. Aaron, I appreciate that might not be as worded as eloquently as you could, but for the time being, that's my 180 characters on it. So, I know. So what does, if we can quickly run through the, Lauren, can you quickly run through the task group, the task force members, and just get whether that's what people want to do or not, and just get a tally?
Sure. We can just run down a list here. Here, I'll start from the bottom up. Denny McComb, I don't think she's on. Lauren Thompson?
Yes, I concur with that.
John Cansey?
I'm going to abstain based on some of the concerns and confusion I mentioned earlier.
Cynthia Fisher?
I too am going to abstain. I'm not sure if this is in the EHI or not in the EHI. Andy, just for clarification.
It is not in the EHI right now in the current definition. Please carry on with the vote.
Sorry, Anil?
I concur.
Valerie?
I think I'm going to abstain mostly because I need to think through it a little bit more.
Arian?
It should be an EHI and it's hard.
Aaron?
That was concur, right, Aaron?
Concur with
it's
reservation.
It's an emoticon. It's an emoticon.
That's right, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
This is Aaron. I agree, and I also concur with Aaron that this is very difficult, but well worth it. So I'm in.
Thanks, Aaron. Yep.
I abstain.
Denise?
Sorry. I concur.
And I just, you know, want to reiterate that we definitely need to be clear about what consent data information we're speaking about in our recommendation. Sure. Thanks.
Thanks, Denise. Cheryl?
I concur and agree with that same qualification. We need to be clear about what consent we're talking about. And then if we have any suggestions related to the technical implementation, I think we should include those as well.
Thank you, Cheryl. Stephen?
I concur and join the reservations.
And Michael?
I concur.
And Andy?
I abstain.
Okay.
So I think we had no nays and about a 50-50 between abstentions and concurs, albeit with reservations. Is that right, Lauren?
Yep, that's correct. I was going to tell you that is correct, yes. Okay. Andy, it would be okay. Helpful for those of us that are in transit just to write out what the specifics were so you can see it, read it for those of us who abstained and just.
Yeah, no.
Thank you.
Yeah, we'll be going this way with our last conversation on the subject. It's okay. What I'll do is I'll do some drafting around it, seeking to capture what I think I heard. I'll pass it around to the full group for people to do feedback into it as well, and we'll take it from there. I think that's probably going to be the easiest way forward. Okay, on that note, I shall adjourn the meeting until the next time.
Thank you, Andy.
Thanks. Good job, Andy. Thank you.
Thank you for taking time.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye.